Hey, this is Chris McBrien from the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast, reminding you that the voting for the Podcast Awards is open to the public from now until June the 12th. Just visit podcastawards.com and vote for your favorite podcast in 20 different categories. And when you're there, please consider voting for Dear Mr. Fantasy in the sports category. You can vote once a day, every day between now and June the 12th. That's at podcastawards.com. Thanks, and now back to the show.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. And with me back again from his wedding beer binge is Matt Thompson.
But I'm in a hotel in South Dakota by myself for work, so.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Logan Morrison just hit another homer, Mike.
Yeah, can we stop the podcast for a second? Logan Morrison just hit his fourth home run in 3 days.
Opposite field too, Apple.
I don't even know what is going on. Honestly, I don't even know baseball anymore.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
He is only, 110 pounds soaking wet and 6'3", so that could be an issue.
Yeah, the rubber duckies.
Yeah, hashtag ducks for short.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 111 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. I am your host, Mike Werner, and we are here for the usual Monday prospect show. And with me back again from his wedding beer binge is Matt Thompson. Matt, what up, dude?
Good, man. Really, really bummed I missed the podcast with you and Eric from Fangraphs last time. And it was a really great show, and I'm really bummed I missed it. But I had fun at the wedding, I guess.
Yeah, it was fun to do, and you definitely missed a nice show. Eric was awesome. Obviously, he had a lot of great takes on a lot of the guys in the upcoming draft. That's going to be coming this Thursday. I'm really excited about it here. And, make sure that you read Matt's top five, draft list for this year from a fantasy lens that's still on the site. And I don't know if you're coming up with a part two of that, right?
That's the plan. Yeah, I want to get it out in the next couple of days here, obviously. But there'll be a lot of stuff after the draft. Because I know you guys, a lot of leagues like we're in, we have a couple of leagues I'm in have a draft in the fall, where you can, for your dynasty team, where you can pick up guys that were just drafted or some of the international guys that signed in July. So I'll have something up ranking my top, 10 or so, 10 to 12 guys from this year's draft for dynasty leagues. I think that'll be worth your time to read and worth valuable information for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And, since people probably listened to last week's episode, who is your, if you had to pick number one this year, who's your number one guy?
Well, I hate taking pitchers, but I know the track record with prep pitchers is scary, but I'm still going Groom. I think the lefty, he has legit ace potential, and not anybody else in that draft class can say that. I think he's, if I'm going to bat, I really, really like the shortstop Delvin Perez. I've heard some questions about, he's kind of a makeup concerns, I guess, but he's my favorite bat, my favorite high school bat in the draft.
See, for me, my favorite high school bat, which probably isn't very popular, is Blake Rutherford. I think that
I like him too,
at least for fantasy. I think he offers legit fantasy upside. I like Mickey Moniak too, which I think will be very interesting in this upcoming
very
draft.
Very Christian Yelich.
Yeah, that's what we kind of mentioned last week as well. So it's going to be a very interesting draft for sure, and one that I think is just kind of more wide open than in past years.
Yeah,
past years there's always been top guys that we know are going to go in the top five. The top 10 this year could go any way or any route for that matter. So it's going to be very interesting.
It's a good year to have multiple picks in the first round. I mean, every year is, but especially this year, there's no consensus top. There's a consensus top 10, but not a consensus top guy. But this draft is just so deep in high school pitching and talent. You're going to see a lot of crazy stuff going on, and a lot of high dollar signs up toward the end of the draft, end of the first couple rounds, and it'll be fun to watch. We'll see. My Cardinals have three picks, so hopefully they don't screw it up.
We'll see what happens. But we do have some news for this week. Not a lot, but we do have one little, little nugget of news here, and that is Edwin Diaz, the prospect righty from the Seattle Mariners organization, just got called up as a bullpen arm. What do you know about Diaz, and do you think that he is fantasy relevant for the rest of this season, Matt?
Well, Steve Cishek's still the closer there, so I think any reliever in that organization you need to watch. Diaz just got called up to the majors, like you mentioned. I believe it was yesterday. It would have been Saturday, Friday or Saturday. He got called up. He's really good. He's been really lights out of the bullpen for Seattle, which was kind of confusing with them moving him to the bullpen because they don't really have much else in their system. We kind of were talking about it beforehand, and we kind of couldn't really believe it. He's a like lock solid top three prospect in that organization because it's so bad. But they're willing to fast track him, isn't it? But they've wanted to fast track him. I mean, I guess that speaks to a lot of they think they're going to contend this year, which they have a good club. But I like him out of the bullpen. I mean, with Cichek being the closer, I think anybody with a pulse and two plus pitches like Diaz, with his fastball and a slider, he could be a dark horse for saves. So definitely monitor him, and we'll see from there.
Yeah, I think he's more of a speculation ad in like deep AL only, but I don't even I don't think he's going to really accumulate much, you know, in terms of saves or holds, really. Because, I mean, yeah, they let go of Joel Peralta in this move, so that's one guy that's kind of out of the way. But you still have Nick Vincent, who I think is a dark horse for some saves at some point. Joaquin Benoit. There's a few guys in front of him. But regardless, I think that he is a guy to monitor. He is in the majors, and he does have the stuff. He has the two-pitch mix to really be an elite closer at some point. So in Dynasty and Keeper formats, which we specialize in, you know, he could definitely be some type of a piece moving forward. And he's going to be very cheap as well since, you know, nobody really knows about him. He's not a high-profile guy or anything like that. So
let's move on. I mean,
go ahead.
I was going to say the one thing I do not like is he has absolutely no changeup, which kind of hinders his upside. The two pitches you can sit on that. I don't know how he's gonna get lefties out, but we'll deal with that when it comes.
Yeah, I mean, but closers don't need to have three pitches. It comes down to having a two pitch mix that's good. Usually it's a slider fastball, and I mean, he has plus velocity. He is only, you know, 110 pounds soaking wet and 6'3", so that could be an issue.
Yeah,
but you know, we'll see. He's an interesting guy to kind of stash in deeper leagues. He's definitely not, you know, shallow league format ready
no,
at this point.
But he'll be upper 90s touching triple digits out of the pen, I bet.
Yeah.
I mean, if not now, then eventually soon, because he's so, like you said, he's so thin.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to some players. We got some requests last week, but due to the draft episode, we, you know, decided to make sure we, you know, got everything covered there. But we did get some requests. The first one is a guy we haven't really talked about in at least a little while. I know we haven't brought him up, you and I, in quite some time. It's Lucas Giolito. He's not a new name. Everybody knows this guy. He's a top three prospect consensus-wise across the whole entire industry. He's also probably the top overall prospect at this point because Byron Buxton and Corey Seager are both up at this point. So far, he's kind of struggled. You know, he's kind of struggled with the walks. He has a whip that's over 1.4 at this point. He's 14th in ERA in his respective league that he's in. You know, what do you make of Giolito right now? And in terms of proximity to the majors, how long do you think it might take for him?
Well, I read a Keith Law update on him. Keith Law published an update for his top 25 guys. You need to read it. It's awesome. Giolito, this AA pitching coach decided to mess with his delivery, and I think that's kind of the reason they're blaming all the walks on. I mean, in the month of May, he had six starts. It was a lot better than he improved up upon his April, though. His April opponents written 300 off of him. He was able to cut it down to a little bit above 200 for May, so he's less hittable. And he walked only 17 and 32 innings, which still isn't great, but it's a lot better than 10 walks and 15 innings like he had in April. So he's progressing back to where he should be. I wouldn't worry about it too much. The delivery chain, he seems to be going back to his old delivery, so just status quo for him now. Don't drop him or hold or push to move him or anything, but he'll be back. He's still probably the top pitching prospect in the game, so don't panic. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, this guy is an ace. I don't really question that. I think long-term he is about as sure as they come to be an ace. You know, he's years and years removed from that UCL tear that really kind of hindered his draft position. But, you know, overall, you know, the issue I have is the fact that his innings, you know, he had 98 in 2014, 116 in 2015. This year he's up to 54. You know, his last start was great. You know, he went six innings. He only gave up seven hits and one earned run. Had eight strikeouts. Really, really solid outing. But in terms of the rest of his starts, he's only gone six innings or more in four of his 11, which is obviously a problem. you know, in terms of proximity to the majors, the Nationals are number three in ERA to this point this season as a pitching staff, which is obviously an issue. And they're number seven in innings pitched. I think that this is a rotation that, you know, still has a ton of guys in there that can do well. And I just don't think that they're in any rush to bring Giolito up. So, you know, I know we had a report, you know, a few months ago that said that he could come up, you know, in June as a bullpen arm. I don't think he's coming up this month. I also don't think he's coming up next month either, barring injury. I mean, AJ Cole really hasn't been that great in the minors, which I know is the guy that you and I assumed would, you know, take a starting pitching role if there was an injury. But overall, I'm still kind of looking at this year as more of a development year in terms of, you know, mixed league draft or mixed league formats and an AL or my NL onlys. I'm really kind of just writing him off for this season alone because I just don't see the impact that he'll have.
Yeah, you just answered my question for me. I was going to ask you if you would still stash him in NL only. I'm not sure I would at this point.
No, in NL only, yeah, you know, because. You know, upside like that doesn't just grow on trees. So if he were to get the call, you know, even if it's 4, 5, 6 starts, or even if he's in the bullpen, you know, you're looking at a guy that can give you some quality ratios and everything. But in terms of, you know, mixed leagues, like 12, 15 team mixed leagues,
No.
Yeah, I don't feel like there's a reason to do that. So overall, I think you and I can agree. We love him long term. I mean, if you're in a keeper dynasty format, nobody's really changing their tune on him. He hasn't done anything this year to really warrant your value going down.
He's still healthy, so that's all that you really need to care about.
Yeah, it's just part of his progression. This is the way it's going to be. I expect him to have, you know, he had 116 innings last year, like I mentioned. I expect him to have hit the 140, 150 mark this year. And then next season, we're talking about him coming up, you know, legitimately as a full-time starter at some point in June, maybe a little bit, you know, after that. That's the way I feel. I feel like he's going to have more of a full-time role in the majors next season.
Oh, for sure. I agree with that. You behind that.
All right, let's talk about Cardinal. And
sweet.
I don't know how you feel about him. It's Jack Flaherty.
Yeah.
He was your first-round pick from 2014. He's currently in the Florida State League. You know, all reports are that he is a pretty safe candidate to get to the major leagues. The issue is the upside. People don't know how big of an upside he actually has. He has put up good strikeout rates in the minor leagues, but he, again, doesn't flash, you know, amazing upside. What have you learned about Jack Flaherty, and what is your opinion on him in terms of being a major league starter? What kind of upside do you think he has?
Well, you missed, like, the best transition you could have ever made. Giolito and Jack Flaherty were high school teammates. Same rotation.
Yeah, that's what I heard, which is pretty crazy.
With Max Fried, too. With Max Fried. All three of them. But when
I think only two of them were going to work out.
Giolito and Fried were seniors, and Flaherty was a sophomore in the same rotation. That's nasty. But yeah. Flaherty's fine. The numbers don't look that great, but you have to remember there's one start this year he made where he gave up 7 runs and only got 1 out. So that'll kind of do a work on the ERA and all the rate stats. but, I mean, for fantasy, he's not the sexiest profile. I mean, I do think he's a major league starter. I think he's probably a mid-rotation starter for the Cardinals still. I mean, I haven't changed my tune on that. I used to think he could be a borderline number two, but I don't think he's going to strike out enough guys for that for me. He does a good job of limiting the walks. But he has to because he doesn't have all the stuff is just pretty average. I comped him to like similar to like a Mike Leake, you know, like a guy that you would love to have on your team, but he's not really a sexiest fantasy guy. I think he fits in that because he's got no above average pitch. He's got like 4 average pitches, but none of them are above. So still a great player, but I mean, not the most exciting fantasy profile.
He's the Cardinals' number 2 prospect. Are you aware of this? According to Baseball Prospectus,
I don't think so. I don't think so personally. I mean, before the season, maybe, but right now, I'd put Bader as their number 2 guy, to be honest. But
We're gonna get into Bader. Well, we already got into Bader a bit, but
Bader or Junior Fernandez or Alcantara, they're loaded. The minor league system's pretty good in St. Louis again, so I'm happy with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I still put Flaherty in the top 4 or 5, but I dropped him a little bit, not because of him, because other guys are rising.
This is the way I'll kind of put my, you know, at least what I think of Flaherty. I think if you're in a dynasty keeper league and you're rebuilding and you want a safe piece that's going to get to the major leagues and is in, again, a fine pitching organization. I mean, the Cardinals do a great job of bringing up arms. I think Flaherty is a very safe candidate to make starts probably at the end of next year, possibly the year after. And, you know, if you're rebuilding and you need a piece to at least fulfill some type of decent value for you that you got for free, I'm completely in for Flaherty. I think that if you are a competing guy and you have Flaherty on your team, that you should sell him off. Because, you know, I don't think the upside's that high. I think that, you know, again, he pitches in a good park. He has a good organization running with him. But I don't really care for, you know, a guy that kind of is going to give me middling stats. I'm looking for upside when I look for pitchers. And, you know, Agreed. He just doesn't really give it to me. You know, safety.
There's still a lot of value here. There's still a lot of value here. But I think, like I said earlier, I think it's more value in real baseball terms. I mean, you look at Mike Leake. I keep using that example, but I think it fits. He's very athletic. Flaherty was also could have been drafted for his bat too, coming out of high school. So I mean, he's an athletic guy, just like Leake. And I look at it, and Leake's still valuable too. He got a 5-year, $80 million contract this winter. So like players like Flaherty, I mean, are nice to have, but for fantasy, they're not the sexiest.
I don't think. Leake is a good comp in, you know, in relative terms, but in terms of strikeout terms, in terms of his strikeout upside, I think it's a bit higher. You know,
it is higher, but the command might not be as great as he gets older. You know what I'm saying? I think the numbers will be comparable in the end game to Mike Leake.
Yeah, they could be. I think that
he's bigger though. Flaherty's a bigger guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a better athlete as well. Probably a better frame. You know,
6'4".
That's yeah, nice. I think that he has like a number one upside build, but he just doesn't have the stuff. So, you know,
sure.
Overall, I think, you know, fantasy mixed league upside is probably of a number five starter.
For fantasy rotation, yeah. For a major league rotation, I would say 3 with a small chance at 2.
Yeah, so he could make an all-star game or two in his career. That's just, you know, hopefully that gives you a little bit of an evaluation on Flaherty for fantasy purposes at least. Let's move on to a higher upside candidate, an outfielder from the Astros organization, Derek Fisher. Really haven't talked about him in a while. What do you think about Fisher this year? He has 10 home runs thus far. He's on the same team as Alex Bregman at the moment, which we both know how I feel about Bregman. Or, you know,
you're higher on Bregman than I am, but I still like him.
He's also in the same league as Harrison Bader, who is absolutely tearing it up right now. I mean, he's been the top
Bader.
Outfielder.
We're going to mention Bader every episode, I think, just because people need to know about him.
Yeah, we said before that he might be a top 50 candidate once the, you know, end of season prospect lists come out. But I'm starting to think that if he continues at this rate, he might be a top 30, top 25 guy.
Maybe. I mean, I thought as far as Bader goes, I tried to temper my expectations because he is on my favorite team. So I try to be a little bit conservative and I said top 50. But I think you might be right. Top 30 seems legit.
If he keeps going this way, I see no reason that he's, you know, not going to be outside or inside the top 30. But anyways, getting back to Fisher, you know, he's the Astros' number 6 prospect, according to Baseball Prospectus. He's also number 71 overall on Baseball HQ's top 100 prospect list. Like I said, you know, he has a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. What do you think about Fisher in terms of fantasy for this year and for the future years?
Well, he's in Double-A now. The strikeout rate is up 4% from A-ball, which is being to be expected. He's facing more experienced pitching. But the numbers are nice. He puts the ball in play a ton. Well, not really. Contact rate 70%. I thought it was a little higher. I apologize. But he does the walks are going up, which is good. He's a nice source of power and speed. I think his value is going to A lot of his value is going to be determined on his batting average. I mean, he has a wide range of what he could end up. I mean, I could see him hitting 240. I could see him hitting 280, 290. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of his future value is going to come from the batting average. But I do think he's a legit 20-20 guy down the road, which is a hell of a player.
Yeah, I like him for a corner as well. Do you think he?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. If you're playing one of those weird leagues where you have a center, where you need a center fielder, this is probably isn't a guy you want. But he's playing center now. He's a terrible defensive outfielder, I guess, from what I've read. But he's quick enough and rangy enough to play center. But probably settles into left or right field. Probably left. But still, that's irrelevant for us that play just straight outfield league. And I still like him as a 20-20 guy. Like I said, batting average is going to vary. He's going to be a good on base percentage guy. I like this kid a lot. Good organization. Good ballpark. I mean, not a lot not to like.
Yeah, I'm very high on Fisher. I don't care as much about his strikeout rate being bad because, you know, he walks a ton. You know, I mean,
yes,
if you look the last, you know, few years of the minor leagues, especially in, you know, high A, he had almost a 12% walk rate in, you know, single or just regular A prior to moving up. He had an 11% walk rate. You know, this is a guy that, and he has a 14.5% walk rate right now. I don't care as much about the strikeouts at that point. I do think that his projection offers 20-20 upside, probably for more if he starts to fill out even a little bit more. He has really good raw power, really good speed. This is a perfect fantasy asset. You know, it's somebody that I know people, you know about him, and people, you know, think that he's an okay guy, but I don't think people, you know, quite realize just how good or important he might be for a fantasy team.
He's one of the rare guys. He's like the anti-Flaherty. We said Flaherty is probably a better real-life player than fantasy. Fisher is most assuredly a better fantasy asset than he would be a real-life player for the Astros.
I completely agree. And I think that he's somebody that's not getting enough run, I guess, in a lot of prospect circles, because people just are more gravitated to the AJ Reeds of the world and all the other, you know, really great Houston Astros prospects that are out there. I mean, naturally they have, you know, one of the best organizations, one of the best systems.
Yeah, I liked him a lot coming out of college from Virginia, but I mean, his numbers, they don't jump off the page if you just look at his individual state, like 279 average, okay, fine. 10 homers, you're like, okay, that's good. But if you look at the sum of all of his parts, looking at a 280 average with almost 390 on base percentage with a 514 slugging, then you got to look at everything and take that into context. And he's a very, very, very exciting fantasy asset.
A lot of people have Kyle Tucker above him. Do you have Kyle Tucker above Fisher?
Yeah, I think Tucker's upside is huge. But obviously Fisher's going to get to the big leagues probably 2 years quicker than Tucker does. So take that into consideration also. But Tucker's a stud. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but last time I checked, he was hitting over 300 in full season A ball as a 19-year-old. So I mean, that says a lot right there.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Well, I you know, personally, I think I would take, you know, Fisher right now, because I feel like he is the better bet to get to the major leagues. But let's look at Kyle Tucker. Right now, he has almost a 10% walk rate. He's hitting 300. His ISO isn't amazing. He only has one home run, but, you know.
He's still growing to it. His brother hits a lot of homers for Houston, too. Preston?
Yeah, Preston, who got sent down to AAA a couple weeks ago.
He'll grow into the power. He's still, like I said, he's only 19 years old, still new to pro ball. I'm really high on Kyle Tucker, actually. I like him a lot.
Yeah, strong strike zone skills. Really knows how to take a walk. Really knows how to, you know, put the ball in play. You know, I still would take Fisher just because he's almost here. But
Tucker's 6'4" and he's only 190, so you got to figure he's going to add 30 pounds, right?
At least.
Yeah, and that's going to be the power possession. 22 stolen bases, only caught 5 times as a 19-year-old in full season ball. I mean, shit. He's obviously got good instincts. Knows how to play the game. I like him. Like, I know we didn't have him originally on our list, but he should probably be on our radar more than he is, because he's a hell of a player.
Yeah, I think he'll finish out the year. He might get a promotion to high A, but I doubt it. I think he stays in A ball the rest of the year, you know, and then he ends up getting, you know, pushed up to high A next season, probably with a promotion to double A. You know, proximity of the majors, if he continues to progress, you're looking at, what, 2019 area?
To put it in perspective with Tucker, I mean, he was looked at as not as polished as Daz Cameron, remember? Like, pre-draft, everyone's like, oh, he's got a better upside, but he's not as polished. Daz Cameron started out this year, and he was teammates with Tucker. They already sent him down to short season ball because he was struggling so bad in the Midwest League. Well, where Tucker's flourishing, Cameron only hit 140. So, I mean, that says a lot.
It does.
Tucker is a hell of a player.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think, you know, longer term upside, Tucker's probably higher. I just like Fisher because he's still going to give you upside, but he is definitely closer to the major leagues, and anything can happen with some of these, you know, prospects. You never know until they actually get there. Something can happen with Fisher as well, but before we kind of go away from Fisher, what would you expect his timeline to the majors is? Because, I mean, the Astros have a ton of minor league pieces. But you have guys like Carlos Gomez who are absolutely terrible. You got a guy like Colby Rasmus who probably will be out of the organization within the next year or two. I feel like, you know, Fisher, if he continues to, you know, keep doing this, then, you know, you could see him possibly next year.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's going to be a player that seems with the skill set that he's going to be prone to the cold and hot streaks, kind of like George Springer. He's not as good as that, but he could be a guy like that where he gets hot, he's real hot, and if he gets cold, he's pretty terrible. There's just a lot of guys with the high strikeout profile are like that. So it'll be take some patience. With Fisher, I could see him being up this time next year, I think is fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
He's never been in AAA yet either. So, I mean, but the Astros aren't afraid to bypass AAA with their guys either. So we'll see.
All right. Well, let's talk about another high upside bat that I know a lot of people were hoping was going to make an impact this year for mixed leagues, actually, and that's Bradley Zimmer. Prior to the season starting, he was number 16 on the Baseball HQ Top 100 and number 23 on the Baseball Prospectus Top 100. I love the guy. I know Justin Mason is a big believer in Bradley Zimmer as well.
All three of us were real high on him. Yeah.
Well, where are you at right now with him, and give us an update on what he's done this year?
Well, I was wrong. I figured he'd be up in the majors this year at some time, but looking at it now, I don't really see that happening. I mean, the numbers, you take a glance at the numbers, which you don't ever just look at the numbers. You got to look at the whole set, the whole skill set of everything. But you look at the numbers, and it's not impressive with the batting average of, what, 230, 231. But you look at that, with the 231 average comes a 364 on base, and he's still slugging nearly 500. I think long term, he's still great for me. He takes a small drop for this year because I don't think he's going to reach the big leagues anymore, even with the Bird and Almonte suspensions. Tyler Naquin's hitting the ball. No reason not to play Naquin if he's not. Zimmer's okay for this year, but the 30% K rate has me scared. I like the rest of the numbers. He's still got 20-20 upside for me. He's a really good defensive center fielder, but we'll see. The upside is still there. The batting average and the strikeouts are kind of scaring me away right now. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel like this is a year where he has definitely made me a little bit more of a believer in his power. But
yes,
the strikeout rate is absolutely alarming. I mean, he started off really good, actually. But the last, since May 12th, he's been hideous. He's batting under the Mendoza line. He does have a couple home runs and, six, extra base hits besides the home run. So eight total. He's still driving in runs as well, which is nice. But in terms of
20 stolen bases. Yeah, 20 stolen bags.
Well, during that time, he, had six stolen bases and got caught four times. So this is kind of just an eye or showing me exactly what he does when he's struggling. So when he's struggling, he still is finding a way to hit a little bit for power, still stealing some bases. He did get caught four times. But his strikeout to walk rate during that time is 24-13 in favor of strikeouts. I think that the main concern for me is the strikeout rate, continuing to grow. When you looked at him, in A ball and high A ball, he was at 23%. Last year in Double A, he was at 25%, and now it's gotten worse. And then you look at the walk rate, that's improved as well. But it seems to me like he is selling out a bit for power because obviously he wants to get promoted. He's probably thinking that if he hits a few more home runs, which he has, that he'll get promoted. But, even though Marlon Byrd is suspended, man, Tyler Naquin has been impressive.
Yep.
I mean, he just hit his third home run in 3 days today, actually. And he's not a bad player. Somebody that doesn't have the biggest pedigree in the world, but was drafted very high.
First-round pick.
Yeah.
Out of Texas A&M, big school. Big 12.
Brantley, when he comes back as well, that's really going to clog things up a bit. Rajah Davis has been fine. I feel like Zimmer is a lost cause for this year, which is unfortunate because before the season started, I know a lot of people, including myself, were hoping that there was at least a slim chance he would make an impact. But at least he hasn't even been to AAA yet. I think once he gets promoted to AAA, we can start to, think about the idea of him making it to the major leagues. Again, in my opinion, he is one of the only prospects in all of minor leagues that can actually go 30-30 or has the upside to go 30-30. The 30 home runs being the one that's a little bit more, crazy in terms of.
Yeah, I don't see 30 homers, but I mean, I think Fisher's more likely to go 30-30 than Zimmer is, but I think 20-20 is easy and is easily attainable for both players.
Sure. Overall, I think the upside is still high for Zimmer. I just feel like the approach should be a little bit more advanced, especially considering he was a college bat.
Well, I mean, there's a theory here. Without watching him play consistently, I mean, I'm just judging by what I've seen and what I've read. But the thought here is maybe he's being too passive at the plate. Maybe he's finding himself taking too many pitches. Maybe he's trying to work counts a little bit too much and then finding himself in bad counts. You know what I mean? That's possible. And that's different than just being a hacker, which obviously he's not, with his walk rate still being 14.5%. So that's a good other way, a positive way of looking at it, is maybe he's just working the counts more. Maybe he's following organization instructions. Maybe they wanted him to. I mean, you never know. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The strikeouts are concerning, but if you're finding yourself down in 0-2 counts all the time or whatever, two strike counts, it's going to be high. I mean, he's still a top of the order guy, so maybe they wanted him to take more pitches and stuff. Who knows, you know?
Yeah, I'm still a fan. I'm not really getting
me
off
too.
Of him or anything, but I just think in terms of this year, if you were hoping for some type of production in AL-only leagues or in deeper mix, I think that it's pretty safe to say you're not going to get that from him.
You know,
in terms of his, you know, fantasy prospects for the future, I think that this is still a guy that's going to steal at least 20 bases. You know, he's not as fast as, if you look at his numbers, you might think that he's a, you know, 30 plus stolen base guy all the time. I don't think that that's the case, you know, and
no,
I also think that his power is more of a 15 to 20, you know, type deal. But I do think that I love his swing. I've seen him multiple times and I love the swing. I know that you're a swing guy as well.
Yeah, he's really good. Sorry to cut you off. He's one of those players, again, he doesn't have really any plus tools, but he's above average across the board, which isn't the most exciting thing because everyone likes the one tool that jumps out, but he's got five tools that are all above average, which is impressive as hell.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically I hate making this comparison to him, but I mean, he's an outfield version of Dansby Swanson.
Wow.
Right? I mean, with the five above average tools, I mean, Swanson doesn't really have – Swanson has a plus hit tool. Zimmer doesn't have that, so I'm wrong on that. But they're close. You're not going to get much different numbers from them at their peaks.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you can probably – you know, I think it's safe to say that Zimmer will probably make an impact late next season – if you're kind of looking for proximity to the majors. And when he does come up, what I would look for from him is to make sure that the strikeout rate isn't outrageous. And I would make sure, you know, when you are watching him, that you see him consistently, you know, getting the ball in play, walking, and hopefully, you know, hitting for a little bit of power and getting a little bit of speed. If he starts to get caught an insane amount on the base pass, then that's a little bit worrisome because I feel like they might slow him down in terms of opportunities, which would obviously hinder his value big time, you know, but there's a lot. I think the fact that, you know, they have Roger Davis and Brantley is getting older and a little bit more decrepit, you know, I think Naquin and Zimmer are the types of guys that are going to be the future of the, mm-hmm. of the outfield on this team. And they're probably going to end up both being in the majors, you know, at the end of next year is my opinion.
Now I got a little bit of different guy for you. Cleveland, same organization, but if I showed you Zimmer's stat line, right, of the .231 average with the good power, and then I showed you Clint Frazier's stat line, which is currently .305, .395, .520, you would think that probably belonged to Zimmer and Frazier. You know what I mean?
I've always been higher on Frazier.
Too, but Frazier's been always been more prone to the strikeout, but not this year. He's actually going in the right direction. So, I mean, that Akron outfield's pretty nice. The Frazier and Zimmer.
Yeah, absolutely.
The rubber duckies.
Yeah, hashtag ducks for short. I think Frazier is definitely the higher upside guy of the two.
And, definitely.
You know, but the problem is that everybody else knows that. I think people are starting to really dig into Frazier a bit, and they are starting to become more of a fan of them, of him, as opposed to Zimmer. Whereas before last year, because of Zimmer's, you know, really, you know, big seasons in the past, you know, people have always been kind of higher on him than Frazier. But I think Frazier is the guy to go with if you're trying to speculate on one long term, or if you're trying to make a trade in a keeper league and you have the choice, you know, between the two, I would definitely roll with him. But overall, I, you know, the future outfield for them, you know, Naquin's probably more of a four, you know, replacement outfielder, but, you know, definitely Frazier and Zimmer, I think, are going to be the starting guys. You know, I did ask you before the podcast, and I just want you to let the listeners know, you think that Zimmer is a legit center fielder, right?
Yeah, I think that's his best tool, might be his defense in center. So, I mean, it's not very valuable to fantasy aspects, but I think gives you an idea of the speed you're dealing with and the range you're dealing with, and he's got a good arm. He'll be a stud defensive player in center field.
Sure. I mean, he's almost 24, so we're getting down to like the nitty-gritty with him. You know, I think that he'll need to – if he doesn't get up next season, then we're going to be looking at, I think, a little bit of problems with
Zimmer.
So, especially if Frazier gets the call before him, then I would definitely
– I was
throw Zimmer's stock down a bit because he should. There's no reason that Frazier should be getting promoted ahead of Zimmer at all.
I was just going to ask you that question. Who do you think? If you would ask me this same question 4 months ago, I would have told you Zimmer. But who makes the major leagues first?
I think it has to be Zimmer, because if it's not,
Bill. Okay.
I just feel like if Zimmer was the plus to
defense will take him, I think.
Especially defensively as well. Like if Zimmer doesn't make the majors before Frazier, then I think that is a big sign that we should be kind of tempering our expectations on Zimmer as a whole. You know, from a fantasy lens at least.
They're both at Double A, and Frazier's outperforming him, so we'll see.
Yeah, but I mean, 1 year is 1 year. You know, you have to look.
Oh yeah.
Based on everything, and so far, I think that Zimmer has shown over the course of his minor league career that he, you know, belongs in the majors at some point. Frazier, I think, has a higher upside, but at the same time, I think he has a little bit more development to do.
They're both top 25, top 30 guys for me, so don't worry about anything. They'll both be solid players.
Let's change this around a bit to more of a sad and more of like a funeral type topic. And this is Ryan McMahon, a guy that, you know, if you asked me 2 years ago about him, I would have said, I want him everywhere. Give me all the shares of Ryan McMahon. I don't care about the strikeouts, you know, just give them to me. But now he has went over to first base. He is performing absolutely terribly at Double A, and you know, this is really the, you know, really once prospects get to Double A is when you can really see, you know, how they might translate to the major leagues. His power has been absolutely insanely bad. I mean,
it's dried up.
Yeah, it's been anemic.
He's not in the Cal League anymore.
Yeah, his strikeout rate hasn't gotten worse, but it's still above 25%, which we always knew was going to be a part of his game, which is fine. You know, I don't mind the fact that he strikes out, but the fact that the power is somewhat gone, the fact that he is getting caught a ton, you know, when stealing bases, I knew that he would be a guy that, you know, could steal you a handful of bases, but, you know, he's still getting caught a ton. You know, what's your status on Ryan McMahon right now, and what do you think, you know, his future outlook is?
Well, how about this for a transition? I'm in a hotel room in South Dakota, so I get the Twins games on TV, unfortunately. Logan Morrison just hit another homer, Mike.
Yeah, can we stop the podcast for a second? Logan Morrison just hit his fourth home run in 3 days.
Opposite like, field, too. Oppo.
I don't even know what is going on. Honestly, I don't even know baseball anymore. If you guys are listening, then you're talking. Sorry. You're listening to a guy that literally has no idea what this game is turning into. Continue, Matt. I don't even know what to say anymore.
I had to interrupt because we had a conversation about him before, but we both hate Lomo. But anyways, McMahon. It's not all roses anymore. I made the comment about how he just left the Cal League, and that's a hell of an offensive environment. The Eastern League's okay, but the Cal League is the Eastern League actually favors pitchers more, but the Cal League is probably the best offensive environment in the minors, maybe not some of the PCL parks, but the power has took a severe dip since he left that league. Here's a pre-draft scouting report on McMahon. Good athlete, good power, above average power, great approach, good defensive tool. He was comped to Corey Seager pre-draft, and he has 20 homer upside. I don't see any of that anymore. I still see the 20 homers. The approach is still there, but he strikes out a lot, which we knew. But playing first base, man, he's going to have to with Arenado there. He loses all excitement for me, really. He's not really a bat that looks to be anything better than average at first base for fantasy formats. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that we need to see more. In terms of, you know, what I've seen this year, I'm not happy. Like, this is very sad news. I feel like all of my shares of McMahon need to go because this is the first time that he's seen legitimate pitching, and this is a problem. You know, his ISO has been almost cut in half, and the strikeout rate has remained bad. His walk rate actually had kind of tumbled, you know, as he advanced, you know, levels throughout the minor leagues. And, you know, I like that it spiked back up to almost 12% this year, but it also might be because he's taking more pitches because he can't hit anything, you know, which is also a problem. You know, I think that you should, you know, if you're listening to this and you're, you know, you have Ryan McMahon, you should definitely hold. Do not sell him because you're not going to get anything for him at the moment, unless you have some people in your league that just really don't keep up with stuff.
Yeah.
And then you might be able to capitalize and get rid of him, which would be nice. But if you do have people that stay on top of it, which I know a lot of keeper and dynasty leagues, that's kind of the case here. You know, you should just hold and pray to the gods that, you know, he ends up turning it around a bit. As soon as he has a power spike, I think that that's when you sell him. Because, I mean, a first baseman that, you know, I think the power could be, especially in Coors, could definitely play up to 30. But the problem is that if he's not making contact enough and he continues to digress – you know, or whatever, get worse as he goes up the minor leagues, then that's a big, big problem, and not one that I'm willing to take a chance on. You know, he's almost 22 now. You know, that's pretty standard for the level. You know, he shouldn't be doing this bad.
No, it's not encouraging. Not hitting lefties either. Not hitting anything. If he's obviously has to change positions with Arenado being there. So first base was a logical solution. He's probably not good enough athlete. I mean, he was a high school quarterback, so maybe he is a good enough athlete to play the outfield. But first base seems like the logical home for him, but he's not hitting enough to be a first baseman. So we'll see.
I think he's a first baseman. If he stays with Colorado, now there is a chance, I'd say, that they trade him at some point. You know, but I think I think everybody on that roster besides Arenado and possibly Jonathan Gray at this point is worthy of maybe Trevor Story as well. You know, those are the only guys that I see being safe, you know, in terms of long, you know, in terms of outlook, you know, for the rest of their, you know,
Can I go on a mini rant real quick for you?
Absolutely.
For a
minute?
I see all these mock draft seasons up here. You know, we're in the middle of draft season. Well, draft's about to start this week. I see all these mock drafts with Colorado taking, like, high school outfielders and shit. How can you not take anything other than pitching? You can't get pitchers in your organization any other way possible, right? I mean, you have to make trades or you draft them. Like, no free agent that's worth a damn is going to sign in Colorado. Like, they should take a pitcher every year in the first round of the draft. Every single year. And that's the end of my rant, but sorry.
Well, you know, I talked about this with Eric last week, and
yeah,
I felt like they should go outfield because I feel like it's safer to get an asset, you know, for
it
them.
Is safe,
because
I mean, you know what?
If you keep on missing with pitchers over and over and over again, because obviously they can't develop them. You know, that Jonathan Gray is the one exception because he is just that talented, and I still, you know, really he hasn't even proven that he is an exception because he hasn't been that great in the majors thus far, but. You know, they keep on missing with these starters. They can't continually do that because they're not gaining any assets by doing that. At least if they're succeeding with drafting their hitters, then they can at least trade. You know, because really, you know, these organizations, they might not be able to. The Rockies might not be able to acquire a pitcher via free agency, but they can if they keep on acquiring assets via the draft offensively, then they can, you know, get rid of some of these, you know, Ryan McMahons of the world, Raimel Tapia, if they don't love him. They have David Dahl still in the minors. Like, if they keep acquiring offensive assets, they can trade these guys to other teams, and then that's how they acquire the pitching. You know, if they can acquire, you know, some what's a low-level arm that's okay right now. I mean, even a Jack Flaherty, which I don't think would happen. But, you know, say a Jake Thompson, somebody, Grant Holmes, somebody like that, you know, even like a Cody Reed.
But you know what? You know what the frustrating thing for me is? This is someone that I look at the minor leagues a lot, and you look at the Colorado, except for their Eastern League park, where McMahon's at now, every other park in their organization is also a hitter's park.
Mm-hmm.
Their pitchers are getting their brains beat in since they get picked up. And then I guess they're just preparing them for the major league level, I guess. But, I mean, they just seem to draft pitching every damn time.
I differ on this. I feel like the best way for them to acquire assets is continually get these hitters because they're hitting a ton more when they're picking these hitters.
I see what you're saying there, but, I mean, I guess with the first round pick, you take the best player available, regardless of who it is. But after that, you need to go pitching heavy.
I think the perfect player for them to draft is Moniak because he has.
See, I want them to get. I want to not that I hate Jason Groom. I don't hate him, but I want him to go to Colorado and see what happens.
Yeah, but I don't want that to happen at all. Because
I want to see if he can beat it. I think he's the number one type guy.
Yeah, my problem is the secondary stuff. They were talking about. We were talking about last week, I believe it was Riley Pint, who is so far projected.
I had him going to Colorado. Yep.
Yeah, and if Riley Pint goes to Colorado, that's a massive problem. I feel like that's an automatic bust.
Probably.
If he goes to Colorado, all he offers is plus velocity. He has a ton of problems with his breaking stuff. Yeah, so if you have a guy that has a problem with breaking stuff going to Colorado, that just spells nothing but trouble.
And from everything I've read, his high school, I mean, obviously a high school kid that throws 100 miles an hour, you don't really need to throw any other pitches. So he doesn't have much of a changeup at this point either because you don't need to use it. What high school hitter is going to hit 100 mile an hour fastball? You know what I mean? So you're not going to be developing a changeup. So I guess, you know, some of those perfect game camps and stuff, he's been messing around with a changeup and people have seen it and they like it. And they think it can be plus, but he doesn't use it regularly. So I think taking him, I had him mock to Colorado at 4. I still think that's what they should do if he's there. But this is a very good chance it doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. But you need to take the shot for me, I think. I don't know what to do for them. It's a tough situation.
Well, of course it's tough. I mean, you're kind of right in the sense, like, yes, they have a ton of, you know, minor league assets that are offensive prospects. So, like, I mean, they don't need more guys to contribute hitting. But I think that that's the best way for them, again, to accumulate assets and for them to possibly trade them off. I mean, everybody in the league needs hitting. And, you know, maybe when, you know, other executives are valuing their hitters, they might not put a grade as high because they've been playing in, you know, Coors or friendly, you know, ballparks their whole entire minor league career. But at the same time, you know, they've done a good job at that. So just continue to do what you're good at and acquire pitchers that you know that you need.
Yep.
But I guess this my thought is going to take time. I mean, the Rockies need years and years to kind of develop their whole entire, not their farm system, but to get a major league club together to be competitive, it's going to take a ton of time for them.
I guess my thought process too is, like, you can always get guys like Gerardo Parra to sign there.
Yeah.
Right. And that's kind of why I veered toward the draft pitcher. You can always get the above average veteran guy to sign there and put up massive numbers for 2 or 3 years and then move on somewhere else, which is fine because you don't want those long-term deals. I guess that's the approach I would take, but I guess that doesn't work all the time either. So who knows?
Hey, you might be completely right too. I feel like the best way to, you know, turn something around isn't to necessarily, if you know you're not competing, then don't worry about the roles that you need right now. Just worry about acquiring assets. And then once the time comes where you feel like you have enough assets to compete, then that's when you kind of look for roles and try and, you know, swap whatever you need to get guys in. Hopefully, you know, Jonathan Gray ends up being their guy that they can kind of count on at the top of their rotation, and then they can kind of move on from there. Yeah, I mean, they'll get Hoffman up, and hopefully Jonathan Gray, if he succeeds, can kind of give him a few pointers on how to succeed in that organization. You know, and if they hit on both of them, not hit, but if they do okay with both of them, then all of a sudden, you know, things might turn around a bit for him, because then if they keep acquiring assets, they can trade a few off, and there you go. I mean, it's going to take time, though, like I said. I mean, Colorado is probably in the worst situation of anybody, and it's not because they don't have talent, it's because they just have such a disadvantage with their home field, which is unfortunate.
San Diego might be too.
San Diego's in a tough spot, but they have at least acquired a few assets. They have, you know, Manny Margot, Javier Guerra, you know, I mean, obviously have Hunter Renfroe, who's been tearing the shit off the ball this year.
He's been real good this year. Yep. Renfro's been awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're at least acquiring some guys that you can help out for them in the future. I actually kind of like what San Diego's done the last couple of years. They've made a few nice moves. They tried to compete, and, you know, obviously that backfired, and they're going to end up getting rid of more, you know, assets like, you know, Kemp and Derek Norris.
They need to,
like that, but
they need to let AJ Preller run his course, because that dude can build a system. Just look at all the talent that Texas has right now. That's all
Absolutely.
Because of Preller.
Absolutely. So, I completely agree. And they've already kind of started on that.
Yep. You
know, so I think the Rockies still are the the worst organization, at least in terms of picking a guy this year. I don't, like, you legitimately could go with anybody, and there's an argument to be made that it was a bad pick for them.
But back to the Padres for a second. The Padres are all things indicate they're going to spend a lot of money for the free international guys in July, and they have 3 first round picks that are all relatively high. I want to say they're in 3 to 4.
And a ton of money.
And a ton of money to spend on those picks. So it's going to be they're the team to watch this draft season and international free agent season and everything. They're going to put some talent into that system. So it'll be fun to watch Preller do some work.
Speaking of talent, let's talk about our last player, Braden Shipley.
Sure.
Guy with decent velocity. You know, most are saying that he's a future number 2, number 3 starter. I have a problem with the strikeout rate. And, you know, he's a control pitcher. You know, he does well, you know, with controlling the strike zone, doesn't give up a ton of walks, only 8 walks to 49 strikeouts this year and 69 innings pitched. But the problem is the strikeout rate. You know, that is a big issue in AAA. He's going to be pitching it whenever he does get the call to Arizona. He's going to be pitching in Chase Field, which is a very, very bad park for pitchers. Overall, what are you thinking about Shipley, who before the season started was the number 67 prospect according to Baseball HQ and the number 38 guy according to Baseball Prospectus?
Shipley is a guy that just doesn't do it for me. I think he's a future back end guy for your fantasy team. He's a mid rotation guy in real life, for the Diamondbacks. I'm worried about the combination, like you said earlier, like you touched on. I'm worried about the combination of the lack of strikeouts and the ballpark he's going to play in. He limits walks, which is good, but when he gets to the majors, it might be that he throws too many strikes and just gets whacked. He might not be the most appealing guy in fantasy formats. I still like him to be a back-end guy for you down the road. Won't be this year. Probably won't be next year either. He'll kind of be a streamer guy. But I like him long-term still a little bit, but I'm not that excited. I would take Flaherty over Shipley if I had to pick.
Yeah, based on the park alone, I think I would take Flaherty. I'm not
similar upsides. Similar upsides. But then you add in the ballpark, I'm going Flaherty over Shipley.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Shipley. And the reason I'm not a fan is because he doesn't have any plus-plus offerings. Oh. His fastball is okay, you know, and then you got a changeup, which is his best pitch, which I like fastball changeup guys, don't get me wrong.
Best combination to have.
But he has an issue with a breaking ball. You know, his curveball is, you know, kind of fringy at best. And, you know, when you factor in the fact that he gives up a ton of home runs in his minor league track record, he's going to be pitching whenever he does make it to the majors. He's going to be, you know, in a fairly bad ballpark. You know, I'm just really not in. I do think NL only owners, it's kind of smart to grab him for this year because I think he does make an impact. I mean, right now they're floating out Edwin Escobar as their fifth starter. You know, Ruby De La Rosa is out. Archie Bradley is kind of a big factor in that too, because if he starts to, you'll become the Archie Bradley of the last couple of years as opposed to the new guy we've seen recently, then, you know, I think Shipley will get the call sooner rather than later.
And here's the thing to know. Shipley is actually 6 months older than Archie Bradley.
Yeah.
And that's a red flag. And Shipley's strikeout rate is fallen the last 3 years. And 2014, he was averaging over nine per nine, which is great for a starter. Then it dropped all the way down to 6.8. last year, and now it's what, 6.3 this year? I mean, that's troublesome.
Yeah, I mean, he's had 11 starts this year. He's made it past six innings or more in all of them except three, it looks like, which, you know, shows me that he does a good job again of limiting the walks. And, you know, but it seems to me like he's highly hittable, you know, somebody that gives up a ton of hits, again, gives up home runs. He's only given up four this year, but he has the track record in his history of giving up home runs. It seems to me like just a guy that pitches to contact, and that's a problem.
Yep.
In Chase Field. Also,
throws
a guy
too
that
many strikes.
I think that he is I think he's a little better than this guy, but overall, I think he's like Miguel Gonzalez. You know, a guy that, you know, when at times he can hit his, you know, spots,
I got a comp for you.
Is okay, but I'm really just not in for Shipley. Go
ahead. I got a comp for you. I'm watching the Rays and Twins game. So what about
Drew Smiley, you son of a bitch?
What about Tyler Duffy?
I guess
seriously,
it could be. That,
he throws
that
a lot
be.
Of strikes. Throws a lot of – holy shit, the guy just fell in the dugout. Rays catcher.
Hank Conger.
Hank Conger caught the foul ball and fell in the dugout and into the Rays dugout, and nobody on the Rays caught him and he hit the ground. I guess that's typical. Kiermaier's not in the dugout, right?
That's just what people want to hear is a Rays and Twins update.
Yeah, well, I'm watching the game live, so it was a crazy play. But anyways, I mean, with Shipley, plus changeup, that's to like. But that's like the only positive right now. The bad things, bad ballpark, bad strikeouts, the strikeout rate decreasing. I think he throws too many strikes personally, which is going to get pounded. Like I said, still mid-rotation upside, but I'm going to let someone else gamble in fantasy formats. It's not going to be me.
Yeah, how about this one? Jeremy Hellickson as a Diamondback. Maybe a little bit worse.
Yeah, I think Shipley has more of a ground ball tendency than
Hellickson.
Yeah.
Which is true. Hellickson's always been more of a fly ball guy.
But
he's a fastball changeup guy. So
That's one thing I want to say with Shipley, too, is yes, the strikeouts went down, but the ground balls did go up, which is good for real life, but for fantasy purposes, it's not anything. He's getting 1.6 grounders per fly ball this year in AAA. So that's nice. But for fantasy format, I don't know of any leagues that count ground ball rates. So I'm sure there's some out there because there's some pretty weird fucking leagues out there. But Shipley is a nice pitcher to have in real life. But for fantasy format, you can do better.
Completely agree. So overall for this year, I would say in NL only, you can hold on to him because I do think he makes an impact. You know, he's probably only going to put up a you know, six strikeout per nine, you know, or so. And I also think he's going to revert back to his, you know, career, you know, three walks per nine as well, as opposed to the one that he's posting currently. So overall, I think he's going to be more of like a 4.25
ERA guy. Aaron Blair-ish for me.
In a worse park, in a division that you do not want to pitch in. You know, Shipley, of course, is not something I'm in for. You know, very limited places that you could actually use Shipley once he does make the major leagues this year. But again, he is going to be making the major leagues, so that's something to kind of look forward to in a sense. You know, at least making it.
Yep. He's going to be extremely volatile, so you're not going to want to be one that you can just start every week. That's not going to be Shipley.
Agreed. So that's going to wrap us up, Matt. That's kind of all of our players for this week. As usual, please hit us up on Twitter or hit us up on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits site. We want to be interactive, and you know, hit us up on there to ask us questions on Dynasty and Keeper Leagues, on prospects. You can also, you know, chat with us on the site as well. Again, really, you know, really easy for us to go on there and chat with you guys, so make sure you do that. Matt, what are you up to nowadays, and where else can people reach you?
I'm up to
no good.
Following the draft, man. No good, man. Just no good. But no, I'm reading everything I can about the draft, man. I love that stuff. I'm like a sponge when it comes to draft talk. I've looked at probably 5 different mock drafts today. So it may not be the most fun thing to do, but I'm in a hotel in South Dakota by myself for work. So
who are the Rays
nothing
taking?
Else to do. What?
Who are the Rays going to take?
The Rays? You know what? I've seen Blake Rutherford going there a couple times.
That'd be awesome.
I've seen Delvin Perez slipping past. I don't see how he gets past Milwaukee.
There's no way he gets there.
But if he doesn't go, if the Brewers don't take Perez, I don't see his next. I don't see the next landing spot until you get down to the Rays, to be honest. So the Rays
don't even tease me with that.
The Rays are looking good, man. I like how they draft. I was real high on Whitley last year, and they ended up with Whitley. And I like Joe McCarthy too, the guy that they picked up, the college bat. I was real high on him too, and they grabbed him. And I like Chris Betts last year. I was real high on him, and they got him too. I think I have the same draft philosophy as kind of the Rays. I always think they do very well in drafts. They need to, because they haven't in years past. So this last year was a big draft for them. So hopefully they have another good one for your sake.
I pray we do. Where can people reach you on Twitter?
MDTomp24, my man. MDTomp24.
Awesome. As usual, you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Hit me up on the site, friendswithfantasybenefits.com. Create a username and all that jazz. We have some forums on there that you can post ideas or different stuff with your league. Any type of questions there, please hit us up on the site. It's awesome. It's brand new. It's banging.
Yep, we want to get more interactive, and this is a perfect way to do it. So get on there, ask us some questions, get some feedback, criticize us, critique us. Praise us. Do whatever you want to do. So let us know how you feel.
Yeah. Ask us questions about your league. Instead of just doing it on Twitter, we can always answer them there. We want to make like a little mini community. So
yeah, I just had an interesting trade offer today. I want to see your opinion. Someone offered me on Twitter, asked me on Twitter, for this year, would you take Carlos Rodon or Jock Peterson?
It depends on what you need. But overall, like in a vacuum, I would take Peterson.
In a vacuum, I told them, see, I said Rodon. But I guess that's a debate for a different day.
It really depends, but I still like Peterson. Rodon's still just inconsistent. You know what I mean? He's inconsistent with his delivery, inconsistent with his pitches. He doesn't make it deep in the game still. You know, there's a reason that the White Sox didn't feel comfortable with their rotation, and Rodon was part of the reason why, not to mention, you know, Matt Latos and Miguel Gonzalez. But
maybe it's just recency bias for me then, since I love prospects so much, and Rodon is kind of the fresher, newer thing. So maybe that's why I went that way, but I don't think he can do wrong either way.
And Carl Crawford just got DFA'd, which means to me that they trust Peterson.
Safety net for Peterson, which they shouldn't, because he's hitting .210 or some shit like that. But
he's still good defensively. He's going to stay on the field. You know,
on base format, it's Peterson. But I'm assuming the league was not an on-base format. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, they're very close, though. To put it in relative terms, they're very close.
Yep.
Also, you can, you know, listen to me on the DFS podcast on Thursdays or on Fridays. I'm sorry, with Cam.
It's good stuff there.
He'll be coming back. Please be sure to tune in to the Tuesday DFS show with Eli and Cam. This Wednesday, Justin Mason will not be on. We will have Ryan Bloomfield though from Baseball HQ on to talk some recent news and, you know, talk some different players and everything. It's gonna be a really good time. Enjoy Ryan Bloomfield very much. You can also.
Good guess.
Read my daily matchups column on baseballhq.com. You can check out my Rays updates on fantasypros.com as well if you want to, you know, get into that. And also, please, again, check out the website, friendswithfantasybenefits.com. It's amazing, like I said. And Also, last thing that I didn't bring up during the show is we're sponsored by officialfantasyrings.com. You can use the promo code FWFB and get 10% off checkouts. Again, they really help us out, so please be sure to go on there and check it out. For Matt and myself, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.